All right, hey guys, and welcome to the Three Drinks In podcast, episode number 176. I am your host, Vince. Over there is your host, Phil.
Hey.
There's Phil. This is one of our Shaken Not Stirred episodes. We continue our saga through the James Bond series with Moonraker. Before we start that, though, I want to remind you that Three Drinks In is available on all streaming services, including Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and iHeartRadio. Make sure that you subscribe, tell your friends, and leave a review. You can follow us on Twitter and Instagram at @ThreeDrinksInPod. You can like us on Facebook and email us at threedrinksinpodcast@gmail.com. All right. You have a beer over there, I saw. What kind of beer do you have?
This is the Kona Golden Cliff IPA.
Oh, nice.
How about you?
Dos Equis.
Oh.
Which is not good today.
Not good?
Yeah, I don't know. Sometimes this beer tastes funny.
Oh, that's weird.
Yeah, I don't know what it is.
It's bad.
Yeah.
Bad beer?
Perhaps I have the Rona and I can't taste anything. It just tastes weird.
Oh, God.
That's what they say is one of the side effects is you lose your sense of taste and smell.
Yeah. Like when they ask, when I go to the doctor for other things and they're like, have you had fevers, coughs, chills, lack of smell, lack of, like, the list goes on and on. I'm like, oh man, that's a lot of things you could add.
Yeah, I went to work the other day to clean up my classroom, and the nurse is sitting at the door with one of those with the same thermometer I use to, you know, check the temperature of my pans before I put a hot steak in them. They point that at your head, and yeah, and like they go on through this whole list, and like they go aches and pains, and I'm like, I go no, they go like really bad aches and pains. I'm like, no, if I didn't have the first one, that's only I have the second one, right?
Right. Yeah.
Like... it's like do you have aches and pains. They go, oh no, I do, but they're not that, but they're really really bad. I won't mention them now.
Well, I've got aches, but not pains.
Is this an either or both end? I don't know what I'm supposed to do here.
Should we be talking about this?
I'm not so sure what I'm supposed to do anymore at all.
I spend no time online. Don't go online for any reason at all.
Except to our Instagram feed or Twitter feed.
Yeah.
Yes. That's all you can do. But we can also watch old, ridiculous spy movies in which nobody acts as a spy.
Yeah, spy is a loose term and getting looser every time you watch one of these.
Yeah. So
Moonraker.
How many more Roger Moores do we have to do?
Quite a few.
Oh, God. I feel like we're here forever.
Yeah.
You know?
He did the most.
He did, son of a bitch.
I think there's only like two or three more.
It's 6 hours of my life I have to get. Just for you, people should all be very appreciative of what we do for you. Even though nobody asks us to do this.
Right. So there's three more.
Three?
Three more with him. He was turning like every 2 years he did another one.
For your eyes only.
Octopussy. And A View to a Kill. That's the one with
Walken.
Christopher Walken. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, and also, can we talk for a second about Octopussy? Like, how did they get away with that word, with that name? I mean,
I don't know.
it's, we used to think back, like, I don't know, like, we don't do this anymore. Or at least I don't do it anymore. But sometimes we would, you know, you look at culture and like the broad scheme of things. And by culture, I mean the 20th century. In terms of like, there was sort of a BC AD thing with the sexual revolution in the 60s. And all of a sudden everyone became much more accepting and open and, you know, tolerant. And before that happened, everything was just, you know, sort of decadent and conservative and, you know, tight as a culture. And so like Octopussy comes out in 1983, which I guess is pretty far after that, but we all still, you know, in the 90s and 2000s we would look back at the early 80s as being, you know, the age of Reagan and, you know, buttoned up, tight lip, whatever. And like, this is the same time, that you have, you know, the N-word being used on like live TV on Saturday Night Live. Like, not a lot, but a lot. You know, like, and not necessarily by black people. I mean, there's that great Chevy Chase, which I always think about whenever I think about how, you know, when people say how uptight we used to be. I went, really? They don't do that anymore.
Yeah, not everywhere.
No. So
it was the name of one of his short stories, and they just took it and they said it's a title. What can you do?
It's just such a bizarre, like, you'd never make that title today.
I wouldn't. No.
Yeah.
But then the content of movies today is much worse.
Worse, you know, in terms of what?
Usually raunchy, I mean.
Yeah.
We just watched that movie with those little kids.
Yeah, I guess that's technically true.
we did view that movie. Yes.
Oh, yeah, that part also very true. And I guess it's just we've chosen a very different set of things to concern ourselves with.
Yeah.
Whereas before it was mostly about sex, but not about race or other things. Now it's like sex is totally fine and nothing else is fine.
Yeah. Yeah, sexual mores have definitely changed.
Yeah. So.
So Moonraker.
Moonraker. What the hell was this? Like, I always knew that this was going to be one of the goofier ones. But geez Louise.
Yeah. This is the worst one I've seen. Ever.
Yeah.
This is horrible.
It even, like, I remember, like, the one, what was the one where he's on, like, they're on, like, the boat at the end, and, like, it was, like, this action sequence with 1,000 people shooting at each other that was filmed clearly in about 4 hours.
Wasn't that the last one?
Was it the last one?
The Spy Who Loved Me, right?
Yes.
Yeah, his the torpedoes, they were trying to have the two torpedoes hit Moscow and New York.
Right. I was also thinking of, I think, You Only Live Twice?
Oh, yeah. When
yeah,
he dresses up like the Asian guy.
Yeah. Ooh.
Oh.
Yeah.
Ooh, that was a thing that happened.
Yeah. So, but this was, I mean, it wasn't cheap in the sense that, like, it didn't cost a little bit of money. It cost, I think, more than, like, all the other films combined. Like, it had a giant budget at the time. And I was reading a little bit about it, and they were saying that, like, they focused on this one because of people's interest in space at the time. Because, I mean, this comes out in 1971, I want to say?
79.
Okay. So
right after Star Wars.
Right. Yeah, that's what I was going to say. It was Star Wars. I was thinking of its relationship to the moon landing. So we're talking 10 years after the moon landing, and it turned out that nobody learned anything about space in the 10 years between when Neil Armstrong walked on the surface of the moon and when this film came out. Because, I mean, we're kind of going to the big shit here first, but just because it's so jarringly annoying. But, like, I'm constantly amazed at the way people look at science fiction in a way. Like, there's, like, bad science fiction is so easy to do because it just requires you to assume your audience is so stupid that they would literally believe anything you put in front of them. And that's kind of what I felt about this movie. Like, they really didn't care about anything. And I get that, like, we want all of our James Bond films to be gritty and serious and, like, you know, he's filled with angst and, you know, I sometimes think about scenes in Casino Royale, which is my favorite James Bond movie, where, like, you know, he just kills two guys with his bare hands, and then he goes into the shower with Vesper because she can't handle it. Like, that's so far from this shit that it's, like, it's barely the same kind of movie. But, like, you know, like, I could see why they made these kind of films different back then. But they didn't make bad movies in 1979.
No.
They tended to make very good ones. The 70s was this weird sort of boom. as the studio system collapsed in on itself and got bought up by, you know, Coca-Cola and other commercial interests, you know, they grabbed all these cheap directors who ended up becoming like the pantheon of filmmakers that we looked at least our generation looks at as being the heroes.
Well, I mean, there was tons and tons of really bad Star Wars knockoffs after Star Wars came out, which is what happens when every big movie comes out and they're like, how do we make another one of these? You know,
everyone seemed to like that movie.
Yeah, let's just do what they did. And then they just throw stuff up on the screen and said, it takes place in space. What's the problem? I mean, Star
you
Wars
like space, right?
It brought back Star Trek. They were going to make another TV show. And then Star Wars made $1 billion. And they were like, whoa, people want space movies. And they made Star Trek movies.
I forgot about that. That's true. Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, I'm sure there's many others that don't even, they're like, you know, B-sides or whatever.
Space Mutiny.
Yeah, Space Mutiny. So they were just like, we have to have this happen in space. And
well, and that part's not the part I have the problem with.
Well, the problem with those is that they're not, first of all, Star Wars is not a science fiction movie. It's a space opera.
Yeah.
You know, it kind of defined that genre. And so it's just a bunch of hokey, mumbo jumbo that just happens to take place in space. And this is also that kind of thing. We're going to send 15 rocket ships up into space and we'll have artificial gravity and, you know, lasers and stuff. Star Trek was science fiction. They had scientific concepts and then they took them and fictionalized them to a degree that you could be like, well, it wouldn't really work that way, but
they treated
it's based
them seriously
in,
enough.
It's based in something.
Interestingly, the artificial gravity thing in this movie was the most realistic thing they had in that space. So it appeared to be just based on the rotation of the spaceship, and that's something that you can achieve in your spaceship. I mean, if you go back and watch the movie The Martian, yeah, it takes place in the future, and yeah, it's science fiction, but the guy that wrote that book adhered so thoroughly to, you know, how we would really do this and just took out sort of the expense aspect of it. Like, he didn't worry about what it would cost to do it. He just went to his scientist friends and said, how would you do this for real? Don't worry about how much it costs because it's fiction. And they said, well, you just need to build this and do that. And I'm sure they fudged things here and there, but artificial gravity was one of the things they had in that movie by having the little ship thing just rotate. And you do that a certain way, you know. So, yeah, I bought the artificial gravity bit, but, like, when it's like, oh, no, there's a problem in space. Quick, to the shuttle. And the Americans run off to a shuttle, you know, for an unplanned launch and just shoot themselves up there. I'm like,
yeah.
That happened in, like, 5 minutes.
With, like, troops.
I mean, I guess I'd seen that years ago where, like, the back of the space shuttle opens up. Like a, you know, like a Russian nesting doll, and there's all these guys come flying out of it. I'm like, what in the world?
One of those Weeble people toys with, like, they're like little pegs. You know?
That's better. Yeah, the Russian nesting doll thing makes less sense. The Weeble people, yeah,
like the doors opened and they just saw like their little domed heads. I'm like, oh my god, they have little guys in there. How cute.
My kids have that same toy.
Yeah,
the one they use in the movie. We have that one.
And I actually wondered if they were going to do like a fake gravity. I'm like, are they going to just float around? Because it's 1979. That would be pretty expensive to do. And then they showed the guy with like the dial. I'm like, oh, okay. They're going to have him just walk around.
Yeah.
But I appreciated the goofy space helmets they wore when they were inside the thing. Like they all had like a uniform that they had.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, God. This is why Austin Powers hit the nail on the head. Because or space balls or whatever, you know.
This is why you have an Austin Powers. Like, I think you don't get Austin Powers unless you start to make these sorts of movies. Austin Powers, like, you can't parody John Wick.
Right.
You know, like, you just, you know, something has to sort of go round the bend, as it was. Like, I loved, you know, Eddie Izzard had a great joke about, you know, looking cool is a circular thing. So you do one thing and it's really cool, and you do it a little bit more and it's more cool, and you can't kind of go round and round and round and round, and you do one thing too far and you're looking like a dickhead. You know, cool, hip, and groovy is right at the cusp of looking like a dickhead. Then all of a sudden you're back to not being cool again. And, you know, that's sort of how I look at the James Bond franchise. Is it's cool, it's hip, it's groovy, and then it just goes around too far and you're back to looking like, what in the world? And that's how you get, you know, Austin Powers and all that stuff, which are really funny because they're drawing on the ridiculousness that something became. If they had stopped at Goldfinger, we wouldn't be doing this. He wouldn't have been doing that.
Yeah.
So Moonraker.
So the space part was pretty awful.
Yeah. For the uninitiated who have no idea what the film's about, it's about space and a guy, a wealthy industrialist who's French.
He's French?
Yes, he's French. So apparently, I actually recognize him from the movie Ronin. He plays a small part in that movie, as like when De Niro gets shot, and they have to go look for help. Jean Reno, who's also French, takes him to a buddy's house, and he's a French actor. It was something having to do with Anglo-Franco relationship at the time, some kind of a film treaty. Like they had to, you know, they were working, I don't know, the European Union's involved.
This is the movie, or?
Yeah, like they had to cast a French guy to do that part. They wanted to have other people, like I think Orson Welles wanted to make this movie at some point with himself as Drax.
Because he doesn't have an accent.
No, he does. It's not... Oh, ho, ho, ho. Like it's a little different. I'm gonna sort of effort this in a second because, like, I can't quite place it, but he definitely has some kind of an accent. If he's like Swiss, French,
because I mean, he's in America in this film. He's in California.
He's a British French actor. So, but he was born in Paris. His mother. His parents were Irish and English. That's funny. Yeah, no, he lived all over the place. He's an interesting guy. But yeah, he has a weird sort of accent that's not quite British, but not quite French. Also, he was in The Day of the Jackal. That was like his big movie. Anyway, but so yeah, it's about him, and he makes rockets, and they go to the moon theoretically. And two people hijack his rocket to begin with. That starts off the movie. There was no like James Bond sequence in this, was there?
Yeah, there was a really big one.
Oh wait, no, I'm sorry, I forgot. I liked it. That was the best part of the movie, actually.
That's the only good part of the movie.
I totally forgot about that bit. But the film opens with this thing, right? Like that bit's not. So that's where I got confused. Right. So like, usually it's an unrelated event in the beginning of the movie that sort of like doesn't do anything but set the tone for the film.
They don't follow that as strictly as they do now.
Yeah. Although now it's all pretty, you know, they're pretty linked together.
Yeah.
Yeah, like they're connected.
Back then it was kind of like, you know, weren't really sure what you were going to get in those opening shots.
Yeah. But anyway, so someone steals the Drax Moonraker rocket, one of them. And Bond jumps out of an airplane, and they do the whole thing with the airplane, which it's like, yeah, it was good. It's fine.
Jumping out of the airplane? That was a great stunt.
I'm always bothered when, like, there's the cool stunt thing, and they have to cut to a shot of Roger Moore, like, standing there with his hands. Like I would rather they never do that than to go, oh, that really is Roger. No, it's not Roger Moore. They didn't allow Roger Moore to jump out of an airplane. Nor would he want to.
Yeah, that's part of the cheesiness of Roger Moore, James Bond.
But that was a thing that I think all action movies that had big stunt set pieces like this did for years was that they had a stunt guy do it, and they would cut to an insert of a guy's face close up, and it like they do it now. They're just better at it.
Yeah, they're just better at it. That's
you know, all. And not always, because like the whole driving on the rooftops of the Azerbaijan marketplace in Quantum of Solace was the worst like blue screening I've ever seen. Mm. Like, you know, it was just Daniel Craig like riding a motorcycle by shaking his head from side to side. Anyway, so then they just go and they like Bond goes to Drax's French chateau that he imported to California.
Yeah.
Yeah. And to apologize?
Yeah. I think it's funny because you hated the space parts. I thought by then I was like, let's do it. Let's go to space. Yeah, lasers. Sure. Utopian society. I'm all about that. Like, I was just like all aboard, I guess, for crazy town.
In for a penny, as they say.
But my biggest problem was the plot.
Well, hang on. It's very charitable to say that this film had a plot.
No, it has a plot. You say that every podcast. It has a plot. The plot is terrible and makes no sense. You can have plots that don't make sense, but it's still the plot because you're moving characters into position for things that they're supposed to be doing and then they don't. But this one is where it's, because it started out, okay, someone stole this rocket ship off an airplane, whatever. And Bond goes to the guy who built the rocket ship to apologize because they were just moving it for him. And then it stops making sense.
We are 18 minutes into the movie.
And I was wondering when it was going to start making sense again. Like, I was like, all right, so what? At what point do we pick up on that thread that Bond is apologizing? Because the first thing they do is try to murder him. And they play this stupid thing where, like, they know that he tried to murder him. And Bond, like, defeats his henchmen every other scene, but they don't comment on it. Like, it's not a thing that you tried to have me murdered, even though I'm just here to apologize. And I don't know that you're up to shenanigans or anything. And that thread doesn't get picked up ever.
Actually, I disagree. There is a moment at the end of the film when they've made it to his, you know, jungle lair. You know,
a volcano lair or whatever.
Like Syndrome has in The Incredibles, yeah. Which I now watch once a week because my son is obsessed with it.
Yeah, there's the worst things to be obsessed with.
No, that movie's fantastic. I can't say anything bad about it. But so there's a moment when Drax is just like, okay, well, you know, this and that and that, whatever, and you're going to die soon. And Bond literally, and I was literally thinking at the exact same moment that this line of dialogue appears, I was thinking, hey, why did he steal his own rocket at the beginning of the movie when he's got like seven more lying around?
Yeah,
and,
yeah.
And then Bond goes, hey, by the way, Mr. Drax, why did you steal your own rocket at the beginning of this movie when you got like seven more lying around? I was like, oh my God, that's amazing.
And, yeah, no. Okay, and, so that they do.
And his answer was literally, because I wanted to.
Yeah, I needed it.
I needed it because this one wasn't so great, and I left my car keys in that one. I wanted it back. There was, yeah. And like that one never makes another appearance. That rocket is just.
It's like part of the other, because he has like 15 of them or something.
Yeah.
And rather than spend the time building a new one, he stole the old one that he loaned to someone.
In like the most obvious, I mean, I don't know how you don't obviously steal a rocket. You have to be obvious about it because it's a rocket.
Right. But, well, he like blew up the plane it was on and killed a bunch of people. Like, couldn't you wait till they landed or something? Or just said, hey, I want my rocket back or what?
Like, and weren't they bringing it back to, like, what were they doing with it? Like, it. So right then and there, where I was like, oh, so nobody cared that the film didn't have a point. Okay, I see. Well,
so like that part, you're right. They did bring that part up. But
it made it worse.
Oh, no, it didn't help. But I remember because, like, why is he actively trying to kill him? Wouldn't it make more sense to just tell him, I accept your apology and you can go on your way?
There's no reason for him to kill Bond.
Because as creepy as the man is, There's no. This is reminding me of the other one when he went down to investigate the black guy selling drugs in New Orleans.
Oh yeah.
They don't explain that he's a bad guy. They just act like he is.
Yeah.
Like they don't say like we think he's up to some shenanigans. It's just assumed this man has an evil plot. And so Drax tries to kill him. Bond keeps beating up his henchmen. And they go back and forth in every city that Bond goes to. And I'm like, why are they just acknowledging this? Like, at one point, Drax even says, you've managed to elude all the myriad ways I've endeavored to kill you. It's like, yeah, you should probably just shoot him in the face instead of the boa constrictor and... the Japanese guy.
Oh, the Japanese.
And the centrifuge. Like, it was so ridiculous.
Like, I can't, yeah, it was one of those.
And that's the whole movie. That's like the first hour and a half.
Yeah. It's just, yeah, oh God. Like, the sword thing was just like, and like that. So. I forget what he was doing just prior to that. Was it like, he discovers the laboratory with the vials of toxic poison, and then he simply walks out, and then that guy comes out to yell at him a lot, and broke all the glass in the fancy store.
Yeah, he was exploring because he had had a hunch that he should just explore this guy, and he goes all the way to Venice where they're making glass, and that's where they're making like the neurotoxin poison that kills people.
Yeah. So what's amazing about that scene is that it's the thing he was using, I looked it up, it's called a shinhai. It's a practice stick. It's made of bamboo, mm-hmm. Which is different than, there's a different kind of Japanese weapon that it's like a hardwood sword that you, like, it's basically just a giant stick you can beat someone to death with if you want to. This thing was very fragile. You use it because you don't want to hurt somebody while you're practicing your samurai sword thing. It's the least effective thing he could have possibly used, short of a wet noodle. So, like, I have a note here. It just says like that Bond is generally awful at everything. You know, there's moments where he does things really stupidly just to prolong the action. Like when they get to the ambulance, like he gets captured in Rio de Janeiro and he's in the ambulance and he, you know, very easily figures out how to get himself unhandcuffed to that gurney. And he does so. He kicks the guard in the face while he's distracted by the hot chick. And then he goes to try to, like, cut the rope of the hot girl before he's completely incapacitated the other guy. And they have to have a giant fight that, like, doesn't end. It just kind of stops. Like, they fall out of the ambulance. And, like, okay, they're off now. And I think the guy drives off into a cliff or whatever.
He goes into that billboard.
Yeah, like, was that the driver? No, that was the other guy.
That was the guy he was fighting.
Right, but the driver of the ambulance doesn't turn around and go, oh, Fred is gone, and so is Bond and the other girl.
No, they don't do that.
So, like, you assume that there's at least one other guy in that ambulance driving it, maybe two. But, like, so, like, he's both incompetent at everything he does. It just sort of stumbles into things because the plot tells him to do it. And the people that are tasked to kill him are just really bad at it, too. And it just makes everything so pointless and clumsy. It's when the guy comes at him with that stick and then it, like, breaks when Bond hits it with, like, a piece of glass. I'm like, it's not even helpful at that weapon. There's just a lot of yelling and that stupid face mask.
Yeah.
Which, I don't know.
There was a lot of fisticuffs in this one.
Yeah, they were all terrible.
Yeah. Like, most of them are. I mean, it's 70s action.
Yeah, but at the same time, like, you know, the second most brutal fight scene in all of these movies is, like, Sean Connery and Robert Shaw in the train in the From Russia with Love. I mean, they destroy that train. That's a really great fight, especially for 1967.
I mean, it's okay. It's not well shot.
Well, it's shot from, like, a very, like, two-dimensional sort of... You know, it wasn't like the train fight in Spectre where, like, they go up and down the train and the camera moves in and out. And
yeah, it's very static.
Yeah, it's extremely, but, like, there's something to that. Like, you know, it's 70, 60 years ago they made that movie. So, like, you know, they just figured out how to move the camera 20 years earlier than that. So, and I don't really fault them, but, like, it looked like a real fight. Is my point.
Yeah, no, it looked like they were at it, going at it, you know.
This did not, I mean, you can do the cheesy shit. Like, you can do that. You can have the guy fly out and then land headfirst into a British Airways billboard, have him look like he's a joint hanging out of the mouth of the stewardess who's painted on there. But, like, you can also make it look like not shit.
Sort of.
I mean, it can be both intense and goofy at the same time, and sometimes that can help. You know, like, you need some sort of levity in certain scenes. So
was one time I thought it was really good when he's during that fight scene and he picks up that blue vase and the alarm goes off.
I missed that.
There's a scene earlier where the woman is saying how, like, here's a blue vase from the 1500s and it's super delicate, but you can't touch it because as soon as you put your hand by the thing, like, it starts to buzz. And, like, everyone goes, oh, ha, 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 ha. And later Bond is fighting that guy, and they manage to go through, like, every piece of glass in the building. Yeah. And Bond picks it up to throw it at him, and it starts to beep, like, you know, the silent alarm, like the laser.
The alarm goes off.
So he carefully puts it back because he's like, well, even I don't want to destroy this priceless thing. And 5 seconds later, the guy, like, throws the wooden sword through and smashes it to a million pieces.
Oh.
But, like, that's the kind of goofiness that's okay, because it's part of the character where he's like, I'm going to kill this guy as soon as I possibly can, but I don't want to break this priceless vase, because some things, the finer things in life, are worth preserving. That's Bond for you, you know, the chateau whatever and the cigars and what have you. You know, but having them stick out of a billboard, I mean, that's just cheesiness for the sake of being cheesy.
Yeah. So there was a tremendous amount of that crap too. Like, of course, the pigeon double take, which you texted me about, was pretty.
That was, oh my god.
Yeah.
I couldn't hold my breath on that one. I was like, did that pigeon just do a double take at the man in the floating gondola that's now driving through St. Mark's Square? And it was like clearly like. They just reversed the film and then set it back again.
Oh, yeah.
Like it blurred and everything. I was like, ugh.
Like, occasionally, I have seen on animals' faces, like, just sort of hints of anthropomorphic surprise. Like, when I was in college, I was in a play my freshman year. Yeah. And the building that the theater was in was an old church. It had a very high ceiling in it, and we were sitting there, and me and the cast were sitting there in the seats. The director was talking to us on stage, and then out of nowhere a squirrel falls from the ceiling and lands on the lap of the girl next to me, and it just, like, it looked for a second like that cartoon squirrel from Ice Age. It just looked totally like, how did I get here and how do I get out? For a second, you're like, ah, like, it didn't know what happened.
Like, I don't want to be here any more than you want me to be here.
It was one of those. And, you know, but still, it didn't do a double take.
Right. It still wasn't anthropomorphized.
Yeah, it wasn't quite a sentient being at that point.
Oh, it was just the worst.
And, like, the other line, like, the one line that really killed me, because it was so, not only was it bad, but it was also dumb. So, like, the worst Bond double entendre thing people will generally say is the end of The World Is Not Enough with Dr. Christmas Jones and Christmas Coming Only Once a Year. And, like, that's really bad.
That is really bad.
Because there was simply no reason to have that character named that, but to get that line in. But at least there was a little bit of thought put into that. So, in this movie, when he throws the Japanese guy out the window and he lands into the piano and dies.
Yeah.
he leans out the window and goes, "Play it again, Sam."
Yeah.
And I'm like, that doesn't even make any sense.
Yeah, I was gonna say something else that really hurts is that this one doesn't have any good jokes. Like, all the writing like that isn't witty. There aren't any good double entendres, you know. Like when he electrocutes people and he goes, "Oh, positively shocking." Oh, like he had lines like that, like you just said, but they weren't good. It was like somebody was like trying to write them and didn't know how.
It's like, yeah, it's like somebody who like didn't speak English.
Yeah.
Trying to write these jokes in English. Like
a meme generator tried to do it.
It was actually the same pigeon from the previous scene.
Yeah.
So I just sat there like, that's not, it's not good or bad. It simply is incorrect. It doesn't even belong there.
Wait, what?
Yeah. So you think about it, you're like, I don't understand any, like, ugh.
Yeah, so it made it like, not boring, but it certainly wasn't fun to watch. Like, usually he's got like funny lines, so you kind of like shrug and be like, well, those are the ones that Roger Moore is in where he has those cheesy lines, but he didn't have any of this stuff.
No, like, he basically also sort of has no, like, the character is not there. And maybe the script was written differently and the character was edited out and there were other things that were like, I mean, these are movies that were made by committee, you know, I think long before, you know, that was a popular thing. It's like, the Star Wars movies are all the brainchild of George Lucas, okay? And, you know, you can credit Steven Spielberg and whoever the editor was for Jaws being what it was. Like, there were sort of singular people, maybe one or two people, that were responsible for ideas that went into making movies. But these movies were just, they were, you know, there was Saltzman and Broccoli and, you know, they got a bunch of people together and there was a new director every few films and it just, you know, you got to have one of these things in there. Put one of those in there. It just, none of it really made any sense because they were simply reacting to what was popular rather than forging ahead and saying, this is the kind of movie that we want to make because we think it's good. And we think people will want to see it and we can make money off of it. You know, it was just a machine at this point. And they were putting together, like, you know, Star Wars was big. Let's put James Bond in space. Like, this is popular now. Let's put that in the movie. You know, and, like, that's also kind of when, like, the Pierce Brosnan ones begin to go off the rails, too. And you can see it a little bit in Daniel Craig movies as well. I mean, what was the weapon of the bad guy Inspector? It was Big Data, as you said when we did that podcast. Like, that's the thing people are worried about now. And so in some way you can sort of, Bond's always kind of done this, you know, in a certain way, in that, like, you take a look at the culture as it stands and you say, what's everyone terrified of right now? You know, for a long time it was the Russians, and so there was always some kind of a weird, you know, secret Russian organization that ran things. And then as that faded away, you know, it was, you know, the what you would call it, the guys running Russia now that the Cold War is over. And then with James Bond and with Daniel Craig, it was terrorism was the big thing. So the villains always reflect what's going on in the times, but here it's like everything is just a mishmash of what the kids might like to look at for 2 hours.
Yeah.
And it's just kind of cobbled together like a, you know, clayed thing just slapped together. It's just awful. It's just awful.
This was the last appearance of the original M.
He died shortly after. Yeah. I forget who plays him in the subsequent. I actually liked him in this movie, I think, more than any other movie he's been in. Because there were like small scenes with Bond where they kind of have a relationship. And it wasn't just that old curmudgeonly thing where he's yelling at him for being late or blowing something up.
Yeah,
you know, like Desmond Lewin always did that, but like it was funny. It was a gag. You know, Bernard Lee and him had like it was boring. But here they were like, he's like, you know, you're officially reassigned. Wink, wink, nudge, nudge, which is kind of what you see with Ralph Fiennes in the new movies, is they have a relationship with each other that's more interesting than just I'm your boss and you're the subordinate kind of a thing.
Yeah, they didn't spend any time doing that stuff. So like I know they didn't have an M in the next movie because they didn't want to recast, which is ridiculous because they recast the character James Bond like 3 times already.
And that's kind of a job that would change hands too. I mean, it was the centerpiece of like the movie of GoldenEye. I mean, it was brought up a lot that you have a new lady as M.
Well, yeah. I mean, that was the first one that was like really harping on who's in charge.
Right.
Which was a good way to go because they didn't spend any time. It was always just Bond is being ordered by some old guy. It didn't really matter who it was, M, because like, as we see in this one, they didn't have any kind of relationship. But in that one, they were like, it's important to know who's sending him to these things because they're always harping on the fact that they don't come back from most of these missions.
Yeah.
So what is it like to be the one who orders these guys out into the field to most likely die? And that's why she says to him, she's like, I have no problem sending you out to die. I don't want you to, though. And then they sort of develop a relationship. I think they went too far with it, but that's my, you know.
Yeah,
clearly I'm in the minority on that.
Well, no, that was something about like Skyfall that I didn't love too much. That like she became like a surrogate mother to him in that movie.
It went close.
It went sort of too far. I liked the detached nature of it and the fact that he was just like, this is my boss. People are trying to kill her. I have to protect her. Like, he becomes almost a secondary character in that movie towards the end. Like she is the focal point and not him, which is fine because she's fucking great. Like, I can't complain. I can get more Judi Dench, for Christ's sakes.
Yeah.
But
because then even when she, after that and they had her inspector, she would like left him a video message. I was like, really?
Yeah.
She had other agents, right?
Yeah, it was somebody. I mean, I didn't hate the idea, too, that she had like that she played favorites. That was interesting to me. That she would find people that, like, you know, she liked them better. She somehow had some kind of affinity for certain people. You know, it sort of humanizes the character a lot.
Yeah, that's okay.
But, like, there was, you know, a couple scenes like that with Brendan Lee here where you could see that he... And most of them were, like... So Bond didn't really do anything or say anything of interest the entire film, but, like, whenever he was called upon to know something, M would always point out, like, or give him a chance to show off.
Yeah, because he almost always knew.
Yeah, he was smarter than everyone in the room for some reason, you know. And, you know, M would always say, well, you know this one, 007, right? And he would be like, yes, it's bloody, bloody, blah.
What do you know about the Moonraker? And he'd be like, oh, only what I read in the papers, except blah, blah, blah.
You know? He'd vomit all this exposition out of his mouth. You know, oh, okay.
Yeah, what it smelled like, for God's sakes.
So, what else was bad about this movie? The lady.
Ollie Goodhead.
Oh, my God.
Ollie Goodhead was horrible in this film.
So bad. I can't think. I mean, Denise Richards would run circles around this girl as an actress.
I was shocked. Like, none of them have been great, obviously.
The bar is already pretty low, everybody.
But they were trying.
Yeah.
You know, even Dr. Quinn was trying, and she was clearly only there to be looked at.
And how.
So this woman was just like, I don't care.
Yeah,
there's not a single line I can't butcher here.
I'm reading her filmography on Wikipedia right now, and she played Jordan Baker in The Great Gatsby in like the 74 Redford and what's her face.
Oh, that was not well received. I don't think.
No, it was terrible. But like the thing, so Jordan Baker is like a minor character in the novel, and she's like Nick's girlfriend, the narrator's girlfriend, and she's described as just being like really hot, but really sort of muscular and aloof. And I went, perfect, because this girl has no personality whatsoever, and she just has to stand there and look pretty and disinterested.
Yeah, just look like you're not having a good time. Which she looked like this entire film.
The entire movie. She was like, again with the insert, whatever it was they were doing.
Like, even when they revealed that she was a CIA agent, like, nothing about her changed. She just kept acting like she wandered on set. Which is my favorite expression for actors who look completely bamboozled as to why they're in the movie.
You know, hey, you, like,
doll. Oh, yeah, hey, I thought this was the car wash.
You want to be in pictures?
No, no, I don't.
Some guy with a cigar and in a too small fedora.
I was thinking that Simpsons when he's looking for a new bar and he goes into the airline pilot's bar and he wears like a fake pilot outfit so that they won't hassle him. And he goes, hey, you want to go and fly the plane? He goes, I'm not an airline pilot. Oh, you fly boys, you crack me up. And then he's dragging him to the airplane. And Homer's like, I keep telling you, I'm not a pilot. And I keep telling you, you fly boys, crack me up.
He's doubles down.
Yeah, it's like that.
Yeah. It's like a joke I heard last night on on the Conan O'Brien podcast. He was saying that he can't sleep at certain times. He gets like restless, and so he would do these tours where he would, you know, go from city to city with a whole tour group, and they would do a show for 2 hours. He would all sweating, and they get back on the bus, and then they would, like, everyone would just pass out because they were so exhausted. And he's like, I'd be, you know, awake, and I'd be talking to the driver, and like, I just, like, I would never sleep. And so someone made a crack about how he needed propofol just to go to sleep. And so he went to the tour manager, a guy who'd been on the road with like Kiss and the Rolling Stones, and he went to him and he's like, I need, like, you know, some propofol if you can get me that one. And the guy took it really seriously. He's like, I do not get people drugs or women. Like, I do not do that. He was just like, didn't get that it was a joke. And so Conan's like, so I had to double down on it right there. I was like, no, I need to get propofol, a truckload of it, tomorrow, 15 whores under the age of 18, and a poorly licensed doctor to administer the propofol. And this went on for like a half an hour. He's like, the guy wouldn't give it up. He's like, I do not do that. I am never going to do that. Don't ask me again. But yeah, they just dragged this poor girl on set, and they went, you're in the movie now.
The movie.
You are pretty enough.
Pretend that you like him. Yeah, no, she was awful.
Oh, I mean, extremely attractive lady.
Yeah. I mean, all of them were.
Yeah, more or less.
See, these movies always have like the secondary girl that gets like killed in the beginning.
Yep, they had one of those.
And like, they can never act either. But at least this one tried.
Yeah, she appeared to be giving it a go.
Yeah, she was pretty too. I mean, they're all pretty.
Some ugly girls, these movies. It's Hollywood, for Christ's sakes. But yeah, no.
Yeah. Great name, though. Holly Goodhead. Google it, kids. I'm not going to explain it to you.
Yeah. I knew a girl. I think I might have mentioned this on this podcast once or twice. Her name was Honey Good Enough.
Yes, that is also a great name.
It's just...
can't make that up.
And I looked at her and I was like, no, really?
No, seriously, what's her name?
She took out her driver's license and she was like, yeah, that's my name. And I stood there for like a minute. And I went,
where'd you get this? It's really well done. This fake driver's license.
ID. I mean, you're already 25. I don't know why you need one, but sure. Yeah, it just, yeah, it was the greatest.
That's an amazing name.
Yeah, it just, it's actually, I think that's a better name than any Bond girl name. Because it's just, like.
Well, it's just as dumb.
It's just as dumb, but the thing, like, you know, Holly Goodhead is just so on the nose, you know?
Yeah.
But the juxtaposition of Honey, which could, you know, it has its own connotations, and Good Enough. I mean, Jesus, that's perfect. There's nothing perfect, more perfect than that. I just you can't beat that.
What was her name in Goldfinger?
Pussy Galore.
Pussy Galore.
Again, it's like you've gone around like it, and Sean Connery is what's, and also what's her name? I can't think of the actress who plays Pussy Galore. She was good. Like, she was a good actress.
Yeah, she was much better.
And like, it was kind of interesting that like that you had. I mean, her character was weird in that she was sort of the bad guy, but not really. You know, she worked for Goldfinger, but at the same time, you know, she was just there to be a, like a sex object for him. But she was also like, you know, a fairly strong female character until she gets thrown in the hay and like they have to do the sex in there like that. But but this was not good.
And this one was like kind of like that. So like aside from her terrible acting, then she's in the beginning, she's working for Drax. She's like, I'm from NASA. I help him build his rockets and stuff like that. I'm like, okay. And then it turns out she's a CIA agent. And I was like, why? What did she do exactly? Well, at no point does anybody ever say this man is the villain and we need to investigate him. We only know he's the bad guy because he keeps trying to kill James Bond for no reason.
Yeah.
So like when she says like he deduces that she's a CIA agent, she has her own gizmos, like the pen with the poison in it and all that stuff. It's like, well, what was her plan? Why was she spying on him? Was she actually helping him build the rockets? Why would you do that?
Yeah, it's
why not sabotage them?
It's unclear. I mean, and like it's the opposite of what you have in like Quantum of Solace, where you have the lady, like the Bolivian Secret Service lady with the scars on her back, and who's seeking revenge against like the ancillary bad guy to the main bad guy.
You're right. I don't remember anything from that movie because it was so terrible.
Oh yeah, and like she's nothing but reasons for like she's on like a mission of revenge that's entirely parallel to what Bond is doing. And Bond is, you know, like their goals are kind of the same, so they enlist each other's help.
Or like Tomorrow Never Dies with the girl, and she's working for Chinese intelligence, but she's there because she says like, this thing went down in the China Sea and I want to investigate whether or not the British did it. And he's looking to see if the Chinese did it. And
right.
They're both looking at this media. So like, at least they both have a reason to be there.
Yeah. That's sort of a common thing. And he's like, just, you know, like there'd be Bond and then the hot Russian agent, there'd be Bond.
Right.
And like, you know, there's always people and like you find out it's a third party. That was always the clever twist about everything was it wasn't the obvious answer. It was the second most obvious answer.
Yeah.
So
she even makes a joke. She's like, this is the point where we would say we should pool our talents. And I'm like, but what talents?
Well, it's true that they do try to create some sense of animosity between the two of them, but you can't figure out why because you don't know what either of them is doing.
Right.
Like they don't seem to have a goal in mind. So, like, you could pool whatever talent you supposedly have, but to what end? Like, what exactly are we trying to accomplish here?
I don't know. And it's not until Bond discovers the poison that he tries to get M to say, like, he's doing something bad. And that's, like, an hour into the movie.
Yeah. Like, he's not clever or resourceful. He just bumbles around from, like, action set piece to action set piece. He's not resourceful or, you know, just, you know, they throw one useless guy at
him. I would rather
the
these movies be balls to the wall, ridiculous, like stupid, if they made a little more sense.
Yeah.
You know, sure. Like Austin Powers is stupid on purpose, but there's no point where I'm going, I don't get this. Like, it makes sense enough that I'm like, okay, he's trying to hold the world ransom for $1 billion by putting nuclear warheads under volcanoes. Like, that's stupid. But at least I can explain it to you with two sentences. I don't know what the point of the movie was here.
Yeah. And like, John Wick is pretty ridiculous as a thing. It's pretty grounded in reality in certain ways. And they've done a wonderful job of like, building a little world around the characters such that they function in a set of rules and such that it makes it really sort of deeper than most relentless action movies. But again, you're not confused. You don't, doesn't matter like, it doesn't matter how John Wick can do all the crazy murdering things that he does. What matters is that they've established that he can do them and that he has a reason for doing them. And he'll keep doing them until he accomplishes a certain goal. Like, that's all you really need to know. Next, like, it doesn't matter.
And, what did you think of Jaws in this film?
I don't know. It was so silly. Like,
okay, why was Jaws in this film?
people liked him. Literally, that was why. Like, people wrote in, and the kids would write in, and they just liked the character of Jaws. And that's also why he makes the turn at the end and becomes a good guy for reasons passing understanding. It's the only again, it's a movie built by committee. So, like, this guy gets lots of fan mail. Let's make him let's put him back in the movie and make him a nice guy. And don't they kill him at the end? Doesn't he die?
No, he gets away.
Really?
Yep.
Okay. I wasn't sure
how. Him and the girlfriend.
I thought they were on the space station that was exploding or whatever.
Yeah, I think they get on a shuttle, though.
I'm not so sure. Mm. I don't care that much, though. he was dumb.
My problem, on top of things, was that he, because he doesn't talk, like, he only has one line at the very end.
Well, here's to us.
Here's to us. So because he doesn't talk for the first hour and 45 minutes, I don't know if he's working for Drax or not. It's not till they go into space that you're like, oh, he's with the bad guy. I just thought he was there.
No, there's a scene. There's a very quick scene. After Bond kills the Japanese yelling guy with the piano, that you see Drax on the phone in some kind of giant room saying, oh, we've had a minor catastrophe, but it's been avoided, and we'll need someone to replace Lim Lum, whatever his name was.
Bing Fang Foom or whoever, I don't know.
What's a really racist name for that guy? And he's like, oh, well, if you can get him, he says. So, like, and then, like, the next scene, you see Jaws getting on the plane.
Oh. So it's because Jaws is in it earlier, too.
What is he doing in it earlier?
Like, he's in it before. He's trying to kill Bond.
Oh, right, in the very beginning. That was the only part that was totally. So, the thing about that opening sequence, too, that was weird, was that it was terrible before the airplane, before he jumped out of the airplane, and then it was weird when towards the end of the falling sequence. Because, like, in the beginning, they're like, we're going to kill you, and they just kind of, like, teeter over to the other, like okay, so you're going to tell him that you're going to kill him before you get to the door, and then you're going to walk past him, and what, he's not going to kick you in the face, like, which is the first thing he does? Like, you guys didn't think this through at all. And so
one would think.
Right? So, and then Jaws appears out of nowhere. Right? He wasn't.
Right. Like, all of a sudden there he is. And I'm like, oh, he's in this movie. I forgot. I was like, why is he in this movie? I forgot.
So, like, I was never sure who was trying to kill Bond there either. And it's not explained. And not that it has to be, but it can be. Like, you're allowed to do that. It
certainly helps.
Like, even the last one, when he skis off the cliff, like, and he's in bed with the girl, and he's like, well, I have to go.
Oh, and, my God, that is still the best. She's dating goon number four.
Yeah. It gave some sort of gravitas to the whole thing. So she's really a Russian agent. She's alerting, you know, the five goons on skis with submachine guns. He's about to come out the cabin.
The same beanie hat.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. At least that's something.
Yeah. She was Russian. And it made it interesting. And then all of a sudden, like, she's now tasked with you know, working with him, and it turns out he killed her boyfriend, who was just the, yeah, right, good number four. He was a faceless, nameless Russian guy.
I love that.
It's great. It's the it's fantastic. So, like, in here, yeah, Jaws appears out of nowhere. That was, as far as I can tell, wholly unrelated to the his appearance later in the film when he's simply hired by Drax.
Right.
You know? Okay.
And even though they go into outer space, he still wears the same pleated pants and suspenders look that apparently helps protect you from the blistering, freezing wasteland that is the Outer Limits. It's like they couldn't give him a jacket or a tie. It was ridiculous.
To be fair, they had a limited wardrobe budget, and he's very tall.
That's true. Size like 30 shoe or something, too. It's a big guy. No space boots for him.
That's true. I guarantee you, they're like, we don't have time to make you a yellow jumpsuit. So
yeah, probably.
You're just going to have to wear the same suspenders the whole time. They're your magic suspenders.
So it's not shocking to me that this movie made the most of all the other ones until Casino Royale. Because I'm sure everyone went to see it to see more space stuff. And they walked out of there like, whoa.
Well,
and yeah. Then later they were like, I don't want to see any more Bond movies.
Well, yeah. Well, that I think has a lot to do with the way in which movies were put out. So, like, Jaws was the first one to start the wide release. And I think that was 76. And then you had Star Wars. And so the concept of the blockbuster was born just before this film came out. And so, you know, this movie was 79. The one before this was, I don't remember the exact one. I'm going to effort this slowly because it's what I do now. Spy Who Loved Me, 77. Okay, so I don't know much about this, but that this made a lot of money, I think, has as much to do with the way in which films were released back then, in that wide thing where everyone went to go see the new James Bond movie. And then it soured people on it because it was so silly. Maybe, I don't know. And they
think so.
Then they I mean, I thought so. And then they didn't go back in such in droves like they did, you know, till 2006.
Right.
Which is amazing. You think about it, Jesus Christ.
Yeah, definitely. I think there was a big enough gap between Die Another Day and Casino Royale.
I think the biggest gap is actually, let's see, Die Another Day. No.
Okay.
Well, License to Kill, 89, GoldenEye, 95. That's 6 years. That's twice as long as it was between Die Another Day and Casino Royale. I think, I think they got better at marketing.
I do remember. It was a big deal when GoldenEye was out because they were like, hey, a new James Bond.
Yeah.
Like,
and it had been a long time.
Yeah.
I mean, that was the first one I saw in the theaters. I remember I went to that little crap theater in New City. You know, and it was
the Cineplex Odeon.
You know, it was a big deal to see. You know, and that became like the November thing every few years. Where you got a new James Bond movie.
Yeah.
But,
and we might this year.
Maybe we will. We'll have to see. Tenet is supposed to come out in a couple of in a few weeks. We'll see how that goes.
Yeah, maybe we'll actually. I mean, who's going to go to that?
I don't know. I really want to see Tenet, though.
Like, I don't know anything about it.
It's a Christopher Nolan movie with time as an issue. Like, when has that ever worked before? All the time.
Yeah.
All the time. So it's supposed to be really, really good, and I wouldn't mind seeing it at home, but I don't know. I don't know how they're going to do movies after this. I really have no idea.
I don't know.
People are saying it's over. That's it. Pack it in.
I think it's probably half and half. I think people want to get out of the house.
Yeah.
It just, you know, summer or no summer, there's nothing happening around here. So.
Yeah. It'll depend on a million freaking things, but like it'll depend a lot on like places that are seeing hot spots getting their first wave now, in like Montana.
Yeah. You Welcome know. To the party, pal.
You know, if like if people start to get it, but fewer people die, and if somebody can communicate that effectively, then I think we might be all right. But I don't think we're going to communicate that effectively to anybody. I spoke to my kid's pediatrician a few weeks ago, and, you know, she's a bright lady. She went to MIT and then Harvard. So, like...
Ever.
And she's like, you know, if everything goes absolutely perfectly, we'll have a vaccine by, you know, Christmas time. I said, okay, what have they ever gone absolutely perfectly? She's like, oh, never. That's never happened. And why would it? I mean, things don't go perfectly ever. So
but yeah. I guess there's a 0.001% chance.
I'll take that chance. No, I'd like to go back to the movies, but I mean, the thing about going to the movies, at least for me, will be like the theater I used to go to see movies in. I'd be there by myself. I'd go like on a Wednesday. And I'd sit there at 7 p.m. and like there'd be nobody there. If they go on like the cheap movie night day, there'd be 1,000 people there. But you go on a, you know, the non-discount day, I'm by myself. I'll sit there in a mask. I don't care.
Sure. Like,
the mask thing doesn't really bother me all that much. It's like, especially sitting down. Walking around, you know, if I'm like running from thing to thing, I'm in the grocery store, I'm walking around, you're getting less air, and so you're going to be, it's going to be more taxing on your body to do stuff. But if I'm just sitting there, you know, I can, you know, breathe just fine. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, if that's the, you know, I'd go back to work at a heartbeat in September if it was a mask thing. If they do any kind of a funky thing where, like, we're on a weird hybrid schedule and we're doing like different, you know, like my kids are daycare all the time or rather not, and I have to be work all the time. It's like, how do we function like this? This doesn't make any sense. So
best part about it is not knowing.
Yes.
That's my favorite part.
Yeah. Yeah. That's awesome.
Cause people keep asking me and I don't know.
Yeah. So, good times, everybody. This is why we're sitting around watching old James Bond movies.
Yeah. Well, skip this one. This one really stinks.
This is really not very good.
This is easily, like, the worst. I'm so glad I didn't pay for it.
I borrowed my father-in-law's DVD copy, and I did. Did you have a problem with your sound, too, in yours? Was that a weird thing with you?
No.
Oh, I heard something about, like...
Not when you download things from the internet.
Yeah, no, I had to find my DVD remote because I haven't used that in 6 months. And the sound was weird. Mm. And I thought it was like, maybe it's like the DVD player. Then I hit stop and you go to that menu screen, which would like play like the Bond music. And it was blaring like, oh, well, no, it's not that. That's not the problem.
Yeah, the Bond movies on DVD have really... Even for like 90s and 2000s DVDs, really obnoxious menus.
Yeah. Because yeah. they kind of leaned into that like futuristic technology thing.
Yeah, like the menu is interactive. Like, oh, but
just play the movie nut job.
I just want to play the movie, okay? Just play the movie nut job. It's true. Because it's like, you know, with the zooming with the barrel of the gun, it's like, oh, come on.
Well, I have
mission parameters. Give me a break.
I have to say that the worst menu thing I've ever experienced is actually on the Mickey Mouse Christmas Carol Blu-ray that we have. So we bought it on Blu-ray and DVD. It comes in like a package, Blu-ray and DVD.
God, how old are you?
It's for my children. My children watch this. I don't, I mean, I watch it, but like
no
I waited.
No one listening to this is going to buy that.
But well, I'm wondering now. People have had the same experience with a Blu-ray move. Like a, you hit pause on the Blu-ray thing, and like it goes to like a screensaver.
Yes, Blu-rays do that. Yeah,
it's very bizarre, and it makes it difficult to navigate back to where I was. We actually ended up stopping. There's a reason to watch this. This came out in like 1964. Doesn't need to be in Blu-ray. Doesn't do anything for the experience to watch it in Blu-ray. So I just put back the DVD in, and it's a regular menu like any jackass could navigate.
Yeah, the Blu-rays have different set, like they're made differently, I think. So
yeah.
Well, you know, it was funny because you were saying like, we were both saying, let's do Moonraker. And then you said that they're not streaming anymore.
And yeah, there was a whole bunch that were up there.
I was dumbfounded because it had only been like a month. I'm like, no, they've got them all on there. And I checked all the streaming services I'm willing to pay for. and it wasn't on any of them. And I was like, I'm the hell with this. I'm not spending $3.99 to watch this stupid movie. And I did what I should have done, which is download all of them. And now I have all of them on my computer. And I don't recommend you do this, kids. I'm just saying.
Yeah, pirating is illegal. We are not sponsoring it.
You're hurting people's jobs. But at the same time, put things online so I can watch them.
And leave them there long enough for us to get to them. We've all got plenty of time.
Perhaps bundle them in some way. I don't know. Yeah, very frustrating.
So.
All right.
All right. Well,
anything else?
Beat this one to death. No, that's it. Yeah. So. What was I going to say? Right. So. We got so off track here. Like, how do we end this again?
Yes. The outro that we always do.
Right, the outro. Well, if you guys have any thoughts about Moonraker that we somehow missed, I can't imagine what that would be, make sure that you find us on Twitter and Instagram at 3DrinksInPod. That's at the number 3DrinksInPod. You can find us on Facebook. You can email us at 3DrinksInPodcast@gmail.com. You can also make sure that you subscribe and leave reviews on Apple Podcasts or Spotify or iHeartRadio or wherever you listen. And as always, please drink responsibly, and we'll talk to you all next time.
Yeah, take care.
Bye.
Where are you? Why do you hide? Where is that moonlight train that leads to your side? Just like the moonraker goes in search of his dream of gold, I search for love, for someone to have a hold. I've seen your smile in a complete, just like the moonraker knows.